I want to give a very warm welcome to everyone today, and we're going to take a break from the series of lessons we've been doing, which is going through the Paul's letter to the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians, and I prepared a lesson specifically with the people in mind who are here for this lesson. In our family group, we have James, Brianna, and Jesse visiting us, who are ages 9, 11, and 12. And so rather than having our lesson on 1 Corinthians, which we normally have, I wanted to prepare a lesson that would be helpful for them, and I hope will be helpful for everyone else too. It's called Lessons from the Bible for the Young. And for those of you who aren't under the age of 13, or who are not teenagers, that there's something for you here too, because the word young can mean different things to different people. And the way I like to look at it is, I think about Moses. Moses's life was broken up into three periods of 40 years, and actually it was the first 80 years of his life he was in preparation for the great work that God prepared for him to do, starting at the age of 80 and leading the people in the Exodus. So I look at Moses and think the first 80 years of life is basically training and preparation. Then at the age of 80, he was finally seasoned wood and he was ready to be used by God. So by that standard, and some of you may be thinking I'm a little bit crazy here, by that standard, I would say that at this point in time in life, I'm still going to be a young person. I have another 17 years to go before I reach Moses' age. So I would call myself a young person too. So for anybody, I'd say, who's under the age of 80, we can apply this lesson, those who are young at heart. Now, a lot of younger people think that when they get older in life, they'll be making important decisions, but they're not ready at this point in time in their life to make important decisions. Well, I want this lesson to encourage you that actually decisions you make now as a very young person can have a huge impact on your life, on your future, on the whole world. And we're going to start by talking about a decision that was made by a very young man, a boy, about 3,000 years ago, which had a huge impact on the whole world and which we can still learn things about from today. I'm going to begin in 1 Kings chapter 3 in the Old Testament. I'll be reading from the New King James Version of the Bible. This is a story about Solomon, who was a king and who was the son of King David. 1 Kings chapter 3, I'm going to start reading in verse 5. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, "Ask, what shall I give you?" Now stop and think about that. Imagine God appearing to you in a dream or a vision saying, "What do you want? What would you like? If you can have anything you wanted, what do you want?" So he's asking the young boy Solomon. Verse 6, "And Solomon said, 'You've shown great mercy to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in truth, in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart with you. You've continued his kindness for him, and you've given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king instead of my father David. But I am a little child. I don't know how to go out or to come in. And your servants in the midst of your people whom you've chosen, a great people too numerous to be numbered or counted. Therefore, give your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours?' The speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. Then God said to him, 'Because you've asked this thing and have not asked for a long life for yourself, nor asked for riches for yourself, nor have you asked for the life of your enemies,'" meaning basically the death of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern justice. Behold, I have done according to your words. See, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there has not been anyone like you before you, nor shall there be like anyone like you arise after you. And I have given you what you have not asked for, both riches and honors, so there shall not be anyone like you among the kings all your days. If you walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments that your father David walked, then I will lengthen your days. So what does Solomon ask for? He doesn't ask for wealth or pleasure or fame or anything like that. He asks for wisdom. He wants to be able to know right from wrong. He wants wisdom so that he can be a good king to govern the people wisely. So he's concerned about other people. And it also says a lot about him that he realizes how much he needs wisdom. He values wisdom more than anything. And Solomon was famous among all the kings for the great wisdom that God gave him. Let's continue in chapter 4 with the story of Solomon's life. In verse 29, God gave Solomon wisdom and exceedingly great understanding and largest of heart like the sand on the seashore. Thus Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the men of the east and all the wisdom of Egypt, for he was wiser than all men, than Ethan the Ezrahite and Heman and Chalcol and Darda, the sons of Mahal, and his fame was in all the surrounding nations. He spoke 3,000 proverbs. His songs were 1,005. He spoke of trees from the cedar tree of Lebanon, even to the hyssop that springs out of the wall. He spoke also of animals, birds, creeping things, and a fish, and men of all nations, and from all the kings of the earth who had heard his wisdom came to hear the wisdom of Solomon. And one of the people who came to hear Solomon was the Queen of Sheba. It talks about that in another story in Kings. So he became the wisest man in the world, wiser than any of the famous wise men of the East, and his fame spread and people came from all over to hear his wisdom. When the Queen of Sheba came, she said, The rumors that I hear about your wisdom, you're even wiser. I didn't even hear the half of it. You're even wiser than I heard the rumors that caused me to come this great distance. So Solomon valued wisdom. If God gave you a question, what do you want? What do you value the most in life? If you could have one thing, would you ask for the same thing that Solomon asked for? And this pleased God greatly that he wanted wisdom, and God gave it to him. Let's turn to Proverbs chapter 1. The passage that we just read talked about how Solomon wrote Proverbs that recorded the great wisdom that he was given. I want to start in Proverbs chapter 1. I'm going to read the first 6 verses. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. So obviously this is the same person who wrote this, the Proverbs we're reading from. Verse 2, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase his learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. To understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles. So, first question about this passage. Why did Solomon write the Proverbs? It says here, he did it to give people wisdom. And specifically, in verse 4, it says, to give prudence to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. So Solomon wanted to teach the young, just as when he was a young man, he valued wisdom. He wanted to impart wisdom to other young people. But it's also for the older people too. It says in verse 5, a wise man will hear and increase his learning. So you also wanted those who were wise, but not as wise as he was, to listen that they could become even wiser. In chapter 4, I'm going to read the first few verses here about the value of wisdom, why wisdom is so important. In Proverbs chapter 4, starting at verse 1, "Hear, my children, the instruction of a father, and give attention to no understanding. For I've given you good doctrine. Do not forsake my law. When I was my father's son, tender and the only one in the sight of my mother, he taught me and said to me, 'Let your heart retain my words. Keep my commands and live. Get wisdom. Get understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will preserve you. Love her, and she will keep you.'" Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. "And in all you're getting, get understanding. Exalt her, and she will promote you. She will bring you honor when you embrace her. She will place on your head an ornament of grace, a crown of glory she will deliver to you. Hear, my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. I have taught you the way of wisdom. I have led you in right paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hindered, and when you run, you will not stumble. Take firm hold of instruction. Do not let go. Keep her, for she is your life." So Solomon is addressing this. He says, "Listen, my son, this is the most important thing. Seek wisdom. Get wisdom. She will, if you love wisdom and devote yourself to wisdom, that she will take care of you." Let's go back to Proverbs and pick up in Proverbs chapter 1. In verse 7, let's see how we go about getting wisdom. The first point was that just basically to value it and to seek it and desire it. In verse 7, Solomon gives very important instructions about wisdom. He says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. This reminds me of a similar passage in Proverbs chapter 9, verses 10 and 11. I'm going to read that. Proverbs chapter 9, starting in verse 10. "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For by me your days will be multiplied, and the years of your life will be added to you." So Solomon says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge and is the beginning of wisdom. Does that make any sense at all? The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom and knowledge? Shouldn't it be the love of God is the beginning of wisdom and knowledge? Why in the world do you think that Solomon would say the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom and the beginning of knowledge? Is fear a good thing? I thought fear was a bad thing. I thought fear was a negative emotion, a negative feeling. Who wants to be afraid? Why is fear a good thing? Well, I think of the story in the book of Exodus when God came down to Mount Sinai. It's talked about in Exodus chapter 20 and in Deuteronomy 5, two places in the scriptures. And when God comes down on Mount Sinai, the entire mountain shook. The people who were at the foot of the mountain watching this happen were absolutely terrified. And in fact, they said to Moses, "Look, you go up and talk to God. Whatever he says, we'll do it. But we don't even want to hear his voice. We're frightened to death of this God." And God's response in Deuteronomy chapter 5 and verse 29. I'm going to read that. Because fear of God is not a negative thing. Deuteronomy chapter 5. When the people were terrified at God descending on Mount Sinai and the thunder and the lightning and the shaking of the mountain, and they said to Moses, just tell us what he says and we'll do it. In verse 29, God says, "Oh, that they had such a heart in them that they would fear me and always keep all my commandments, that it might be well with them and with their children forever." So God is a loving God. He cares about us. He cared about the people of Israel. And he says, "Oh, I wish that they would always fear me like this, because if they fear me, they will obey me and keep my commands, and that will bring about tremendous blessing in their lives." So God sees that fear of God is a good, healthy thing. Fear of God keeps us from all kinds of sin and trouble. Psalm 34 has a lot of very encouraging things to say about the fear of God. I want to read some selections from Psalm 34. I'm going to start reading in verse 4. And this is a psalm of David, so this was from Solomon's father. Psalm 34 and verse 4. David says, "I sought the Lord, and he heard me and delivered me from all my fears. They looked to him and were radiant, and their faces were not ashamed. The poor man cried out, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him and delivers them. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who trusts in him. Oh, fear the Lord, you his saints. There's no want to those who fear him. The young lions lack and suffer a hunger, but those who seek the Lord shall not lack any good thing. Come, you children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. Who is the man who desires life and loves many days that he may see good? Keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking deceit. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their cry. The face of the Lord is against those who do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. The righteous cry out, and the Lord hears. He delivers them out of all their troubles. The Lord is near to those who have a broken heart, and he saves such as have a contrite spirit." The picture I get here about God from David is God is a loving and protecting God. It says, "The poor man cries out, and the Lord hears him and saves him from his trouble." And then in verse 7, it says, "The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him, and he delivers them." Now, I don't know what that's like. It's hard to picture that in my mind, but I get the sense that God is sending his angels to protect those who fear him, to watch out over them, to keep them from the enemy, to protect them. He says, the lions, as powerful as they are, that they suffer hunger sometimes, but those who fear God will not lack any good thing, that God will take care of, he will provide for those who fear him. So, fear of God is a good thing because it keeps us from evil, because it keeps us from troubles, because those who fear God will be protected and they will not lack anything in life. And they will be motivated to depart from evil if they fear God. So fear of God is a good, healthy, protecting thing. And that's why it's the beginning of wisdom, because it teaches us to avoid sin. Let's go back to Proverbs chapter 1, see what else Solomon had to say about wisdom. So we've learned we need to seek wisdom first, like Solomon did, and value it. We've learned that it begins with fearing God. It's the beginning of wisdom and knowledge both. And then I want to continue in verse 8. My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother, for they will be a graceful ornament on your head and chains about your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol, and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all kinds of precious possessions. We'll fill our houses with spoil. Cast your lot among us. Let us all have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any birds, but they lie in wait for their own blood. They lurk secretly for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. It takes away the life of its owner. So, after he says you need to fear the Lord, the next instruction he gives is he says, if sinners entice you and say, come with us. Now, in this story here, what are the wicked people trying to talk the person into doing? They're saying, come with us, and we're going to go and gang up on somebody and rob them and take their money. And we'll split it all among us, and you'll get a part of the money. That's what they're talking them into doing. They're trying to talk them into doing. Let's take their possessions. We'll fill our houses with it. And if you join in with us, we'll split the wealth with you. The important instruction that Solomon gives here is in verse 15. He says, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path. What is Solomon telling the young man here to do? Don't walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil and they make haste to shed blood. He's saying, avoid them. Stay away from them. People who have bad intent, people who are wicked, who are evil, who just want to be abusing other people, who are violent. He says, stay away from those people. Don't go down their path. There's a proverb I want to turn to that I think of in connection with this is in Proverbs chapter 13. Verse 20. In Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 20, it says, he who walks with the wise will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. So, who you spend time with has a huge impact on the person you become. Those who walk with the wise men will be wise. You make a decision in life that you're going to be spending time with, hanging out with, becoming friends with people who are wise and are seeking wisdom, your life is going to be totally different than if you spend time with and become friends with people who are ungodly. One of the most important decisions that you can make in life as a young person is who you will spend your time with, who you look up to, who you're around. Now, most people, if you stop and think about it, how do people choose their friends? Well, a lot of people choose their friends on basically, this is the cool crowd. These are the people I want to hang around with. These are the popular people. If I can get in with the popular group, I'll get in with them. If I can't get in with the most popular group, I'll get in with a group that's maybe a little less popular than that. Some people will pick their friends on the basis of interest that they have in common. Maybe you like playing the same sports together. When I was in high school, I was on the debating team. And most of my friends in high school ended up becoming lawyers. For some reason, I ended up becoming an engineer. But even now, many years after I'm out of high school, my best friends from school are people I knew from the forensics club at school, because that's what we did, something together like that. Or sometimes your friends will be just the person who was reaching out to you. Maybe you were alone and somebody was there and they just decided that they wanted to become your friend. So a lot of times our friends are just chosen randomly. They're not really particularly for any spiritual reason. And so we can have good friends or bad friends. 1 Corinthians chapter 15. Paul talks about this in the New Testament. 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 33, he tells the Corinthians, "Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits." So it goes both ways. Those who run with the wise become wise. But if you have evil company, you get corrupted by that. Now, a lot of people think, well, I'm an individual. I have my own convictions, and it doesn't matter who I'm spending time with. But the Bible says actually it does make a difference. You tend to become like the people you spend time with. That's why it's so important to choose who your friends are and who your influences are very carefully. And the influences that you have are not only the friends that you have, but also it's the other things that influence you too. It's the movies you watch. It's the shows you watch. It's the books you read. It's what you do with your time, who you spend time with. That's why it's really important for me in my own life to be extremely careful about what I do. I mean, I almost at this point in time, I almost never go to the movies. I can't remember the last time I went to one. I don't watch television in my house. I was at lunch today, and somebody asked me at lunch if I watched a particular TV show, and I mentioned that we don't have a television. Everybody looked at me like I was strange from another planet. And I said, well, I explained why I don't have a television. And it's really because I'm concerned about the influence. There's a lot of ungodly influence. So we have to be very careful. Paul says, don't be deceived. Don't fool yourself. Bad company corrupts good character. Choose the influences that you have, the friends, the companions, the books, the heroes that you have that you look up to in life. They'll determine the kind of person that you become, so that's important. So, very simple lesson, and it's just repeating what Solomon told us here in Proverbs chapter 1. First of all, we need to seek and value wisdom just like Solomon himself did as a young man. It's more important than popularity, fame, money, pleasure. It's more important than any of those things. And God really blessed Solomon because he valued it so much. So seek wisdom in life, number one. Number two, it starts with fearing God. Fear of God is a very good thing, because it keeps you away from sin, and God loves and protects, provides for, and watches out for those people who fear him. And then the third thing is be very careful about who you spend time with, because that will determine the kind of person that you become. Those who run with the wise become wise, but he says, don't be deceived. Bad company corrupts good character. So be very careful in choosing your influences. And then I want to close with a thought from Jesus himself. When we're talking about wisdom here, Jesus said in the end of the Sermon on the Mount that someone who hears his teachings and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock, that when the storm came, the house stood. It was solid. And Jesus also talked in Matthew chapter 12 about Solomon too. Jesus said, "The queen of the south came from the ends of the earth," that's the Queen of Sheba, "to hear Solomon's wisdom, and now one greater than Solomon is here." So as wise as Solomon was, Jesus is even wiser than that. So if we want to seek wisdom, we need to be listening to what Solomon said, and then even more, we need to be listening to and putting into practice the things that Jesus said. Thank you very much.